To the town of Albury, who rode a stranger one fine day. Hardly spoke to folks around him, didn't have too much to say. No one dared to ask his business, no one dared to make a slip. The stranger there among them had a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was early in the morning when he rode into the town. He came riding from the south side, slowly looking all around. He's an outlaw loose and running, came the whisper from each lip. And he's here to do some business with a big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. In this town there lived an outlaw by the name of Texas Red. Many men had tried to take him, and that many men were dead. He was vicious and a killer, though a youth of 24. And the notches on his pistol numbered 1 and 19 more. 1 and 19 more. Now the stranger started talking, made it plain to folks around. Was an Arizona ranger, wouldn't be too long in town. He came here to take an outlaw back alive or maybe dead. And he said it didn't matter, he was after Texas Red. After Texas Red. Wasn't long before the story was relayed to Texas Red. But the outlaw didn't worry, men that tried before were dead. 20 men had tried to take him, 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. The morning passed so quickly, it was time for them to meet. It was 11:20 when they walked out in the street. Folks were watching from the windows, everybody held their breath. They knew this handsome ranger was about to meet his death. About to meet his death. There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the ranger is still talked about today. Texas Red had not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron. When he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his head.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, you could ride your daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off about San Antonio.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone call my name one day and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar. Now smoking in a Jeep.
absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. All right, and welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 10th of August. It's a Wednesday. And as I promised you last night, we've got a special guest in here in just a minute. We'll drag him in here and want to remind everybody of our class coming up in Albuquerque this coming weekend. We've got Personal Defense Handgun 2 and 3 are going to be just north of Albuquerque in Santa Fe County. For those that have signed up, they've gotten emails to show exactly where it's at. We've got, I think, two slots left in that class if you guys want to try to get in on it now. And we've got a ton of news, got a lot of other stuff we want to do, but we've got something much more important tonight, so we'll take care of this. We'll get caught up on our little buffer hour on Friday night. So what we've got here, who we've got, you know, many times we've talked about... Oh, before I do that, I've got one more thing. For those of you that don't know, one of the two greatest patriots that ever lived, probably at least in our times, died this morning or late last night. That was Mike Vanderbilt. Mike has been on the show a time or two. Matter of fact, we're putting together a special with an interview that I did with him back in 2012. And I'll have that up for you Monday. It's an old one. We've got to take a lot of stuff out of it, out of other networks and stuff. So as soon as we get that done, we'll get that up for you. Now, matter of fact, Mike has talked about it. We've talked about it with a lot of our guests, and that is the importance of sheriffs that will abide by the Constitution. Now, before we start tossing that term constitutional sheriff around here, let me give you a little insight on that. Just because you tell somebody that you're not running on a constitutional platform does not mean you're not constitutional. You could run on the platform of, say, child abuse, right to life, how to can pickles, whatever you wanted to do, but that doesn't mean that you're not constitutional because you know how to can pickles. So the guest we've got coming up here is... I even hate to use the term constitutional sheriff, but it's become a catchphrase, and there's something magical about that. And by joining some little club and filling out paperwork, that you get to be a constitutional sheriff. Well, Graham Harbold is a constitutional sheriff, but he's got a little different platform that he's running on, and we'll let him explain that to you here in just a little bit. So, Graham, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Cope, for having me.
You betcha. It's our pleasure, for sure. Let me check here and make sure before we go on and on here for 20 minutes and then find out we don't have sound. Let me see here. Yeah, it looks like we had to drag him in. So, yeah, they're here and everything. So, we're good to go. And Molly's in there, the Molly you asked me about a while ago. She's in the chat room. So,
Is that the Arizona Molly that I dropped some signs off to?
I don't know. She can hear you, so maybe she'll answer you.
Ah.
Wow, there's a short delay tonight.
Yeah, that was pretty quick, actually.
Yeah, she says that's the same one. So. Well, anyway, Graham, I'm going to turn the floor over for you for a minute, and you can introduce yourself and what you're doing, and then we'll get into some questions and whatnot.
Awesome. Just like Cope said, the constitutional platform is huge. I believe in the Constitution 100%, and I don't believe that I need to be a puppet for a few. I'd rather be the voice for my whole county. And so that being said, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm from Arizona. I have a family. I have a wife of 18 years, my only wife. I say that because if you know anybody locally here in my politics, I've only been married once, not multiple times. So I have almost a 17-year-old and a 11-year-old. Wow, we're getting old. I'm an Army vet, infantry, been to Iraq, been in law enforcement for 10 years with two agencies. I currently, end of February, I know Cope's been talking about me. I resigned to run for office on the platform of not only helping our community, but also bringing back the constitutional rights and the liberties to our citizens here. I know I've already been kind of told that we want to talk about civil asset forfeiture, things along those lines, and believe me, let's definitely talk about it because our county is currently living off of it when it comes to our current sheriff, and I'm not for it whatsoever. And so I look forward to having that conversation. When I decided to run, I was approached by several local law enforcement's finest firefighters, on top of some guys and gals I worked with. And we have a major attrition. We can't hold on to people, period. The current sheriff's lost 8 years, over 30 deputies, last 4 years, over 20 of those. And it's not money, it's leadership. And training budget's currently $10,000 to $16,000, depends on what day you talk to our current sheriff. And we need to change that. He's sitting on $2.5 million of RICO funds, that is community funds, and we need to get that back out to the community and our smaller agencies. So that being said, I am looking forward to the discussions this evening. I would really like to, obviously we'll talk about some federal level issues, but I would really like to stay to our local politics, because I do have some local folks listening, and we are running a primary, and I'd like to target those key individuals to help enlighten them and get them out to vote for me on August 30th. So I do have a Facebook page, Graham Harbold for Sheriff for Navajo County, and we also have a web page that will link that to you as well. So look forward to speaking with you. Thanks all for coming out, and Cope, thank you. The restaurant we're at, Sakura in Pine Top, Arizona. Come out, eat here. The food was amazing. The company was great, and looking forward to it. So start beating me up.
All right. Before they beat you up too bad, let me see if I can get your Facebook page up here and get that in the chat room so they can check it out here. If I can about as coordinate as a baby gorilla here for some reason. There it is. All right, let me get this link up for you, and then we'll get on with it. All right. Come on. All right, there it is. Okay, well, one of the questions that we've had that someone sent in to us is about civil asset forfeiture. You just want to start with that and get it out of the way?
Absolutely. Asset forfeiture is a tool used by a lot of agencies, not only statewide, but your local agencies. Sheriff's offices are using it quite a bit as a tool for...
He's on the chat room.
Sorry, we're getting thrown off here with the amount of folks we have. I don't believe in it. I'm a firm believer that there needs to be prosecution before I take any of your property, anything along those lines. I'll expand on that a little further. Is once you are arrested for a crime under reasonable suspicion, probable cause, and you are taken to jail, say we pull you over, anything along those lines, what's currently happening in our county is they automatically flip your merchandise. They indict you on what they believe. If somebody believes it, they automatically are flipping it or they're going to the justice court on it. I'm a firm believer in, for an example, I've been using this. We get a information that there's a house being burglarized, there's a white truck with large quantities of TVs in the back of it. And one of our patrol officers go ahead and make contact with you, meets the description, and he finds the evidence involved, say the tool that was used to breach the door, and the TVs match the house that were said to be taken. We arrest him. We, at that point, secure the property, and we hold that property until that individual has gone through his due process. We're going to indict you because you were involved with it, and we're going to take your property before you even go through the judge. I am not a fan of that. It will not occur. Civil asset forfeiture will cease. And when it comes to your actual property, if you are a burglar, if you are a drug dealer, if you have multiple quantities of items in your vehicle, and it is proven in court that you are guilty of your crime, we are going to seize your property if it was used in the act of the crime. If you are not found guilty, I will take you personally outside to our storage unit and hand your stuff back over to you. I'm a strong believer in this. Civil asset forfeiture is being way overused. There are some even credit card scanners that are being misused right now. I've seen a lot of pages. Some of the big issues are agencies are just off of belief, scanning cards, and taking money immediately from those individuals.
Yeah, that's a bunch of crap. Who came up with that idea?
Well,
that's retarded. I can't even believe they do that.
The biggest news reporters out of Oklahoma, there's cops, I guess they have them specifically on the making traffic stops, and this is just what I've read. Do I believe in it? Is it happening? It is happening.
It's happening in this county.
It is happening. I will say the tools currently are being used in our county as being able to prove fraudulent cards or not. There are tools that are being used to seize money, and that is a huge trafficking fund. They use fake cards and or stolen cards and or, I mean, if you have a credit card reader and a scanner and all these items that are out there, the cartels are putting them on room keys for hotels now. If it has a magnetic strip, you can load things onto it and use it just like an ATM.
Wow.
And that is what these tools are designed for, and what they're used for is to verify that it is a room key, or if it, and this is just an example, it's a room key, or if it's literally a card that's being used to access money. And that's the proper use of it, the tool of it. And so I'd like to see the tool. It's just like having pepper spray on your belt as law enforcement. If you carry it and you have it in case you need it. If it's being misused, like we're seeing a lot of law enforcement tools currently are being misused, it's time to cease it. But to clarify it, I am absolutely not for at all civil asset forfeiture. There must be prosecution prior to the sheriff's office taking control of your property. So
as it is right now, there's it's just a matter of suspicion, and they're taking your property, and the chances are you may not get it back, whether you're proven guilty or not, right?
Oh, that's very correct. No, they're seizing cars.
And what part of that is constitutional?
It's not. It's not constitutional. You're not receiving your due process. And that's the problem that I have currently with our county is so you have a sheriff, a county attorney, and three judges that run together. And I'm just saying they have the capabilities to flip your property pretty quick. And I have seen it happen. It's within 1 or 2 weeks before you even make it to your second court appearance upon being arrested, you're losing property. So in Mali, it's $2.5 million. It's not 9.2. And the $2.5 million is actually RICO funds, which are racketeering funds, divvied out by the state from the federal government. That being said, there are specific uses for those that can fund training, that can fund equipment for agencies, and also programs for our schools, which is a huge platform of mine. I'm wanting to get drug programs and schools into our local schools throughout the county, and this money can fund that because it's programs to help bring our kids back to us and away from society, and that's a major use for that, on top of upping our training budget and getting equipment out to several of our, quite frankly, all of our local agencies. They've asked for it. They've been told they can't have it. And the current sheriff's holding on to it for his drug interdiction team in case they lose their grant. So, which is bringing money in off of asset forfeiture. So that's kind of what I'm saying about that. There's multiple uses for it, but it's extremely transparent, and you have to follow the guidelines specifically on those, unlike the current HIDTA situation. And our current sheriff sits on both of those actual boards, the RICO and the HIDTA. So he kind of has a lot of say on where the money goes, which I kind of find suspicious. So just for clarification on that.
Now, one of your major, what am I looking for here? Your major platform you're running on here, one is education.
Yes.
With not only with the kids, but with citizens.
That's correct.
Looking at educating. Let's get into the kids in a minute, but I know everybody's wanting to hear about the program that you want to start with the deputies and citizens together?
Correct. I heavily believe in posse comitatus. The aspect of allowing our citizens to interact and be a part of the sheriff's office is huge. A lot of agencies call them volunteers, or they're the sheriff's posse, or anything along those lines. And some people go so far as to use militia. That's a buzzword this day and age that people equate to extremists, anything along those lines. But the fact is, they're the sheriff's posse and people willing to stand up for your rights and your citizens. So I will be growing a sheriff's posse. I have a 3-tier system: my unarmed volunteers, my search and rescue posse, and an armed posse that will assist with situations along the lines of securing anything along those lines of specific venues or properties for evidentiary value that need to be held other than an unarmed individual. When it comes to the actual education aspect of it, I'm going to be starting we'll call it a advanced academy in the White Mountains. Everything's a coalition here, so we'll stick with a coalition name for now. But I want the citizens to sit down and actually take classes and be in the classrooms with, and have the ability to take them with, our frontline troops. What is that going to do? That's going to build our community back. You're going to know who's on your side. You're going to know who's willing to go toe-to-toe with you. On top of, it's going to give that citizen the ability of having the knowledge of specific classes. And I will say that 60% of my classes will be able to be open to the citizens, but I do specifically want to start a constitutional class in the aspect of the Constitution itself, Fourth Amendment number one, First Amendment, and Second Amendment, and we'll delve into those. I have a couple of instructors that are willing to come up that are pretty well known in that realm. I'm not mentioning names yet for the mere aspect of My political opponent likes to take my platform every time I speak, so I'm going to cease that right now. And tomorrow she'll want to start some classes as well. So, either way, we're going to keep that DL. If you know Cope, get a hold of him. We can share some information that way. But we are wanting to absolutely involve the citizens with constitutional classes, because as an officer responding to calls, there are so many times that I've spoken with individuals that just didn't know their rights. And I have unarrested people because they didn't know their rights. I knew their rights better. We educated them. We got everybody cooled off with verbal judo. We cooled the scene down, and guess what? Everybody's out of handcuffs. We're going in separate ways, and we're moving on with our lives. So that's kind of my educational platform for outside of the school systems.
You know, that's what you call a peace officer, not a law enforcement officer. There's a big difference between Andy and Mayberry, Andy of Mayberry and
Barney. Or no, Miami Vice. We'll say Miami Vice.
Steven Seagal.
Seagal, that's a good one too. Yeah,
there's a huge difference there, and that's what we need to bring, not only the constitutional sheriffs, but the but peace officers, as they were in the 60s. You know,
yeah.
There's just not enough of them anymore. They have quotas to fill, and everybody has to be a law enforcement officer now. Molly's asking what's your plans for Arizona Rangers. Now that's above and beyond what you were just talking about there.
That's correct. The Arizona Rangers, actually, I've been to one of their meetings and kind of gave them my platform on them. They are a tool that needs to be used. My concern is being able to get them integrated into our agency other than what our specific volunteers are doing now. People hate it. There's insurance involved. They're LLC. All of our volunteers currently are LLC. The sheriff doesn't want to take responsibility for them, but he wants to work the heck out of them. I need to redesign that, recreate that plan. Like I said, I have a three-tier plan, and sit down and make sure my insurances and or find new insurances to be able to operate to protect my volunteers. Not protect the agency, but to protect my volunteers. The Arizona Rangers specifically, they do a lot of training. Quite frankly, Cope and I were talking about this the other day, or actually this morning, that they actually do a lot of shooting. They shoot more bullets, quite frankly, than I believe the deputies do. But is it good, solid? Do they absorb? I need to be involved with it. I want them involved with my training, and that's going to be a part of our plan for the armed individuals. I don't want them to lose their longevity and history, so we need to see if that's something that they want to actually do, if they want to come on board with me, if they want to be used as an LLC. They will be used. They will be integrated. I believe in them. Very wonderful people. Anybody that's willing to strap on a vest and come out and help your local law enforcement, I am absolutely for, and we will get you in the system.
Especially free of charge.
Absolutely.
And they're willing to do that on their own time.
Yes.
Then they've got something that a whole bunch of other folks don't have.
Yeah, the big picture is the incumbent not only is losing his paid officers. When I got here 4 years ago, there was 118 volunteers for the SAVs, and they're down to 32. So he's even losing volunteers. So there's you have to be able to show respect to everybody, use them, and ask them what they want to do and be able to progress with that. Because if they're volunteering their time, and some of these folks just want to work, they need something to do. So there's stuff to do in the office. I know there's a few of them that want to help out, but they also long for training. So that's part of my educational plan as well.
You know, and you say that they probably shoot more rounds, but you know, there's a big difference between going out and just shooting.
Well, that's fair.
And
correct.
Figuring out what it is they're doing while they're shooting. I mean, it's there's a training aspect there that I think is lacking horribly in not only, you know, you can, and as we've talked about on many times, and I think is the aspect of dry practice.
Correct.
You know, I would rather put them through a good dry practice regimen and shoot 50 rounds a month and know what they're doing than go out and have them shoot 1,000 rounds a month and not know what they're doing.
That's true. I agree, and that's part of the aspect of integrating them into our training. So,
let's see. I thought there was another question here. Let me see if I can find that. So what You had mentioned something about federal stuff there, and to begin with, stop all this noise making here.
Are you talking about the
Forest Service, BLM,
all of the alphabet?
Yeah, all the alphabet soup agencies.
Well, the Forest Service, I've worked with them for a while. I know the commander of the area, Southwest Region. I'm search and rescue. I'm national and state search and rescue certified. And so I've worked with the Forest Service, especially specifically the law enforcement aspect of it. And I know they get a – there's a bad to every law enforcement agency. Them being federal, people are saying, hey, we don't want them in. Yes, there's some gung-ho as well. But these guys, where we are in our area, are here for the right reasons to protect and assist. But that being said, I am a fan of and will be supporting the bill to give the counties the control of their Forest Service. What that's going to do is bring more money into my agency. We are the third poorest county in the state of Arizona. If our power plants, speaking of letters, if the EPA ends up shutting down our coal plant in Joe City, we're going to lose immediately the first year $3.4 million. That's just from that specific venue, on top of all the staff that moves away and the employees that move away. So what is that going to do to my ability to actually maintain a sheriff's office if I have less money than that? So there's a lot of stuff to look into, but if the federal government takes law enforcement out, that enables me to, which we're already doing. The Forest Service currently is funding quite a bit of our agency right now because we patrol. They ask us to patrol. There's a cross-communication, and we respond to accidents, everything along those lines if they're not in the area. So I'm a big fan of that specifically. I know there's a gentleman out of, senator out of Utah. I forget his name. I can't remember that man's name. Chaffetz is, pushing a bill to take all law enforcement out of Forest Service. And to disseminate monies throughout the county percentage wise off of the amount of Forest Service that you have. I'm a fan of that. I think that will be a huge asset to the sheriff's office and enables me to use that money for vehicles and for staff that we don't currently have, but we're doing the job already. So that I'm a huge fan of that. When it comes to the fire assets, our economy is terrible. If we're able to manage our own forests, I think we'll be able to drum up a lot of business for our small businesses. Our mills can open back up. We can bring a lot of jobs back up, which will enable a lot of families instead of taking them off, going and having to move down to the valley, anything along those lines.
You know, a lot of people, well, we talk about getting the feds out of the, out period, back where they're supposed to be. And we may be able to do that at some point, but people have to understand that this is not going to be an overnight thing.
Absolutely.
It's going to take years to make that happen. I think we can.
Well, yeah.
But in order for us to be able to provide, the equipment and manpower for the wildfire firefighters and whatnot, we can't just tell the feds to get out and then tomorrow have all this under control.
No. But what we, our Navajo County currently is not in a crisis with the federal government. We talk about the Oregon situation, the Hammonds. That would not have happened if that sheriff stood in front of them as a mediator and said, you know what, this is my county, let me deal with it. And if he would have stood up and said, no double jeopardy, guess what, you guys burn more forests than these folks have ever thought of, even though it was they were already charged on, the federal government comes out and says, we're going after you. We all know it's has to do with mining and all that uranium stuff, but the big the big picture is if that sheriff stood in front of those folks and dealt with it like a man, that wouldn't have happened. Nobody would have been harmed, and we could have been living happily ever after. When it comes to the actual fire situation, I know there's programs out there that as a sheriff I can bring in apparatuses that our local firefighters can use, on top of be paid for from the federal government for forest fires. That brings more income into our agencies. Yeah. The fix of that is MOUs, memorandums of understanding. As sheriff, you automatically just walk in there. And if we don't currently have any situations, you sit down with these folks and you write one. And so it's on paper at that point, and you can sit there, interact with each other, and you have a contract. If there's a breach of contract, then you have a civil ramification you can deal with. And also, as a sheriff, that gives me the leg to stand on when an officer from one of these alphabet agencies want to come in here and actually attempt to take control over. But we just don't currently have that here. I know there's one of my opponents is claiming that the overreach in our county is outlandish, but the big picture is we just don't have it yet. And so we need a sheriff in there that can make sure it doesn't occur, and then we can move on with our lives and hopefully bring jobs in and progress with what we currently have and better it.
Molly, I think that the way I understood it, I think Graham has answered that. If I understand your question correctly, you're saying rancher, and I'm assuming the V is for versus, rancher versus Forest Service versus sheriff, who wins in Navajo County? Well, what I got, I understood there, I think it was Navajo County, sheriff.
Absolutely.
This sheriff understands that there's a what his authority is, and
I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
There you go. That's what everybody needs to understand here.
Yes, there are reasonable people and there are cowboys. So I agree with you on that one.
You know, there's why is it so hard for sheriffs across the country? You know, we've got 3,400 sheriffs or whatever it is, and how come only five of them are there's more than that probably, but what is it they don't understand about their authority? And you talk to a lot of different sheriffs, and they're right lockstep with the mainstream media and with the federal law enforcement. And is it the money? Is it their education or?
No, I don't. I truly think it's well, after doing this for 6 months now, I truly think that they chase the money once they see where the money comes from, especially in law enforcement, stat driven. So if I bring in this many traffic stops, I can get this grant. If I bring in traffic stops and drug arrests, I can then get this grant. So they target where the money's at. And that's the problem with our current agency, is the fact that our county's poor. So if he's found a niche, and our current sheriff knows drugs really well, I challenge you to ask anybody out in Heber. The big picture is that's what he's chasing. He's forgot about our community. And he has completely forgot about our next leaders and our kids. I've been a school resource officer, and I really, truly want to get back into our kids' lives and give them at least the opportunity to make the proper choice, because these kids are at school for 12 hours for a before school, during school, and after school program. The schools are feeding them twice a day on top of a snack in the afternoon. And they're at the house for 4 hours, and they go to sleep, and they're back doing it again for 5 days a week. That's where that RICO money needs to be spent. Very minimal cost out of $2.5 million. And to get every school, not only off-reservation, but reservations north, south, east, and west of us. In our county, we can get that stuff involved with those schools. And so I'm a big fan of that, on top of getting everybody the training that they need. So these issues with shootings, give them the scenario basis that they need instead of just shooting at paper. Get them the tools. There's tons of technology out there now, on top of just training, that through training we can cease some of these unneeded officer-involved shootings. Don't get me wrong, I am still a cop, and you point a gun at a cop or you come at a cop, do you not expect the law enforcement to shoot back? And tell you what, if that's going to happen, I want my officers ready, and I want people that are willing to back them ready as well.
Well, we're a little over time on our break. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, let's get into your plans for kids and schools and education. And does that sound all right?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Don't rock the jukebox. I wanna hear some Jones. My heart ain't ready for the Rolling Stones. I don't feel like rocking since my baby's gone. So don't rock the jukebox. Play me a country song. Before you drop that quarter, keep one thing in mind. You got a heartbroken hillbilly standing here in line. I've been down and lonely ever since she left. Before you punch that number, could I make one request? Don't rock the jukebox. I wanna hear some Jones. My heart ain't ready for the Rolling Stones. I don't feel like rocking since my baby's gone. So don't rock the jukebox, play me a country song. Rock and roll, but when your heart's been broken, you need a song that's slow. There ain't nothing like a steel guitar, drown a memory. Before you spend your money, babe, play a song for me. And don't rock the jukebox, wanna hear George Jones. Play me a country song. You don't rock the jukebox. Play me a country song.
My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable, either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we, the people, will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable. Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Alright, we're back. A little longer break there than usual, but we've got, let me turn this sound down just a little bit. We've got, had some other folks to talk to and stuff while we were on the break, so. Anyway, we're with Graham Harbold, our sheriff's candidate for Navajo County. I say sheriff's candidate because as far as I'm concerned, he's the only one. So we'll get back with him in just a second. We've got our next issue here is what he plans for, and you don't hear this too much on a lot of sheriff's candidates. They've always got some other agenda, something real romantic or something going on that sounds
more exciting, but I think Graham has a big vision for the education and advancement of education of our children in Navajo County. So let's get into that, Graham.
Well, real fast,
something I haven't talked to you too much about. So
yeah, while we were on break, we got a couple questions that were sent in. Clarification, Mountain Shooter. Hey, I'm for the law enforcement side. I know the firefighters. I don't know what you necessarily do for Forest Service, but there is a need. But when it comes to law enforcement aspect, allowing the sheriff to actually take control of the lands and patrol them and help assist with that, I think, is actually what I'm speaking of. So hopefully we didn't hurt your feelings, but there's jobs that are out there that are needed. I'm not necessarily saying, especially for our forest up here, forest fire. We will not be able to recover if we lose
a
quarter of a town because of our tax system and our economics. So thank you for what you do. If you're a forest fire, if you're a Forest Service fireman, thank you. And we'll move on from that. Second question is, yes, where'd it go? Oh, there it is. The 45th Amendment. No, I'm just joking. Windock. your question. Your opponent has distributed a video accusing you of several things, including violation. I think that's going to be Fourth Amendment. Right while you were a sheriff deputy and writing bad checks. The video actually shows that states that I've been arrested multiple times and have written bad checks, and the video states I, at gunpoint, held two women, and that's about 30% true. You're right, 20 years ago is what they're discussing on my arrest. At age 18, I was pulled over for speeding, and I was given a citation. It was a school zone and on a Sunday, but I thought it was a school zone, but it was 25 miles an hour all the time, and I was clipping at about 50. The gentleman was nice, but I needed to go to school and pay the citation. I went to school and did not pay the citation from the aspect I thought I would fulfill my obligations. So therefore, they suspended my license. So in Mesa, I was pulled over because of the vehicle I was driving. We'll say it was looked for by law enforcement in the aspect of it was a modified vehicle. So I was pulled over a mile from my house. The gentleman advised me my license was suspended, so I received a criminal citation. I was never actually booked into jail and or physically arrested and taken away. So you're right, it's a criminal citation. I do know that as law enforcement, a suspended license in the state of Arizona is a criminal citation. It's a class one misdemeanor, so therefore I was arrested on paper. So that's clarified number one. Number two, 1998, when my wife and I were first getting married, the Army was very slow on changing our pay. Starting a family, I had to chance payroll. I obviously am not a very good gambling man. I lost twice, and I did write two checks that bounced early in my marriage, and that was 1998 to survive with my new family. I was getting paid $471 a month. So, yes, it happened. I believe in transparency. The funny thing is these documents, before I get into the Fourth Amendment issue, I can't even get. The current incumbent sheriff has worked with my opponent, a Republican candidate, and they're now working together, and they were given my personnel packet, which I have never even seen before. So one thing that they're not claiming on those documents, it clearly states right above these specific items that on both agencies I worked for Pinal County Sheriffs and Navajo County Sheriffs, upon questioning under a polygraph or lie detector test, there was no deception, and I passed both, and I've had a long career in law enforcement with multiple accolades, multiple awards, to include Deputy of the Year in 2015 for my current agency. And we'll be shooting those posts out and pictures of the current sheriff giving me those awards. here within the next few weeks, just to refresh his memory on that. The other thing is on this Fourth Amendment. This is the only IA I've ever been involved with, Internals Affairs, in my law enforcement career. It's along with 14 other individuals, other deputies. It was an active shooter call for service. There was a gentleman that was engaging animals throughout his neighborhood and ran inside of a house. I was training a young rookie at the time, so I was in plain clothes. So therefore, I secured my long rifle and we were holding the corner. Now, the house that the gentleman ran into, out came very expedited movement towards us. We're two females. And for officer safety's concern, absolutely at the low ready, if any of you shooters know what that means. We talked them over to us. The gun was never actually pointed at them, but it was at the lower ready position to protect ourselves. We checked their 90% area, which is their waistline, because they were in pajama-style clothing, and checked their waistline, told them to get behind us. So for that being said, that's for complete officer safety concern. They were not detained other than a quick pat-down, and then they were free to leave behind us. They were not going back inside the residence. For that, all 14 of us were given a 8-hour block of instruction on search and seizure and Fourth Amendment. So that being said, that is the slanderous material that's being fed around for me. It's a great question. Thank you for the question. I'm more than willing to give that to anybody or to answer those questions. And so we'll move on from there.
You know, I got to say something. You know, these things are so incredibly minor that it's absurd to me that somebody's even brought it up. Most of the people in this room have more of a record than that over that period. And I'll tell you something else. I don't care if it was a felony. If it was pardoned since then, who cares? What you did 20 years ago or whatever it makes, if you've taken restitution and got everything squared away for it, then what difference does it make? I don't understand why they keep pushing this.
Well, real fast, Molly, did you pay it back? The very next day, because I was driving deliveries for my father, we took care of my suspended license, which was almost $1,200 to take care of because they suspended. I had to go back and get it all re-upped. And that was taken care of immediately. And then for the checks, knowing that we had to do that, and it was bounced, we automatically knew that we ended up having to pay an extra $65 for it. So, yes, that was equated into it, and that's been paid for as well. So the multiple arrests never happened. I was not physically arrested, but on paper, I was absolutely given a criminal citation for driving on suspended. And the officer was actually quite nice. Per state statute, you're supposed to, the law enforcement officer shall arrest that, or shall seize the vehicle for a 30-day impound. Being a mile from my house, he allowed me to drive it home and park it and figure out life the next day.
Go ahead.
For the record, I'm willing to speak with that about anybody. And like I said before, those documents I couldn't even get. So before I witnessed those, I didn't even know that those were on there. They keep those for sanctity for... in case I go work for another agency, anything along those lines. But being forthcoming with everybody is one thing that I extremely am passionate about, and being transparent. And so since they're out, they're absolutely true. I do challenge you, if you're beating me up or asking me or wanting to know these questions, ask about some of the information from either of my candidates. But either way, we got an answer. We're moving on. Molly, yes, everything was paid off immediately. And I don't know anybody anything. So, I kind of touched on this before. We know it didn't come from my first agency. It came from this current agency, Navajo County Sheriff's Office, and that's where they secured it from, even though it truly says anonymous on a lot of the Facebook posts They forget that we're law enforcement officers and have been, so we're able to research our own situations. So either way, yeah, whistleblower. We're hoping for one to give us that information. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure court documents will legal actions being pursued by my law team, and I'm sure some court documents will get that figured out for us as well. I wouldn't mind having a whistleblower so I can save some money for my campaign, but we'll get it figured out, and I appreciate the question, and anybody that's willing, pass the word on. If you live here in Navajo County, if they want to know the whole story, have them please approach me. So back to the education aspect of it. I'm a firm believer in our kids. You've heard that already. I like to look at it as percentages. When you have percentages in the drug populace, we have a very high drug concern here in our county locally. And we chase the same people over and over again. We're a very small county, so you consistently see the bad guys day in and day out doing the same thing. You make a traffic stop on them. They typically have the same drug on them and or are currently high. So we have a drug court here locally that is started by the county attorney and our current sheriff, and 50 individuals go through it every year, and less than 10 graduate. MCATs are narcotics or undercover guys, major crimes apprehension. They use it to flip individuals and giving them the ability of going on probation and beating that. But they put them into situations that put them breaking their probation. So they either pee hot on a drug test, so they miss their, so they lose their probation, or anything along those lines. That's why people aren't graduating from it. So that being said, my goal is to get programs into schools by using law enforcement, firefighters, National Guard, in the aspect of if they're in uniform, you walk into a school campus, these kids will automatically look at you, and you have their time of day for that specific minute, and you can target, speak to those young kids. With those programs, I want to bring in SAD, Students Against Destructive Decisions. And it's no longer Students Against Drunk Driving. It covers the whole gamut of what our young people are dealing with in schools and society this day and age. There's notmykid.org, and there's two other programs. We kind of discussed one. I'm not going to put those out. Those two, I've already working with the drug coalitions here locally just by purely already campaigning and sitting down and talking with folks that are in the same aspect as me, knowing that they understand that I can fund these through RICO funds. And that will lead to the ability of teachers, staff, and anything along those lines that can target these kids for the 12 hours that they're at school, giving them the opportunity to include their parents if they want to come to the meetings. But the sad thing is a lot of these folks can't because of our economy, because they're working up to three jobs just to make ends meet here locally, and these kids are having to be at school. I've been beat up a bit about this. We're going to parent our kids. We don't want cops in schools. Well, I tell you what, it's not just for protection. It's for mentoring. At the same school that I was a school resource officer for, I became very intimate with these kids in the aspect of them confiding in me. We closed out a lot of cases. And just because of these kids, I learned this in Iraq when I was there. The kids saved us a lot because we would befriend them. We'd get out and play soccer with them. And that's where it drove home that our children are still innocent individuals. They're not for the bad guys. They want to help. They want to be a part of what is good. And if we can keep that thought process on into their adulthood, 18 is all we need. My target audience is 5 to 15. Those kids in Iraq saved my squad numerous times from roadside bombs. And the sad thing is, within 5 months of them, every day, every time we traveled by them, they would come out. We'd give them stuffed animals, chocolate, MREs, anything.
You gave them MREs and they still helped you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They love those things. That's why we gave them to them. But they saved us. And after 5 months, we couldn't protect them. That family disappeared. So I want to bring that stuff into our kids' lives so we can keep them innocent and give them ideals, give them the information and how to help. And I know we can do that. The biggest thing in our life was I coached basketball, and so they'd see me outside of uniform as well, but they would see that my mentoring of them and the want for them to succeed was still there out of uniform. And that is one of the things that I know there are a lot of people on this mountain that we can get involved with. So the big picture to me is we need to get back into our schools, protect our kids, mentor our kids, give them the opportunities, all of our kids, not just off reservation, and not just my demographic where my voting populace is. I'm very, very adamant that I know I can get these onto our reservation schools where they have a terrible gang, terrible drug. These kids are intoxicated at age 8, and it's unbelievable. One of our reservations, the longevity of the male is 32 years of age because of alcoholism. And so if we can get and help promote their lifestyle for the betterment, get back into their communities, help them understand their own communities and their own ways of life, and work with every reservation and tribe on top of off reservation, I know we can make a major percentage change. We spoke a little bit about percentage. 33.3% of the kids we don't have to deal with already. The parents are doing a wonderful job. These kids are on track. The next 33.3% are the kids that I want to target. So if we get those 66%, knowing that 33% of teenagers, everything along those lines, I have a teenager myself, they're making the choices. They know they're right already. We've all been there. We can laugh about it. But they're not listening to mom and dad. They're figuring out life. They're growing up. Those are the 33% where they're not going to listen to us. But 66% of those kids, if we can make that strong push to help that's a much higher, extremely higher percentage than our drug court and chasing the same people. The adults that are making the decisions to do this, the bad, to drink and drive, to do the drugs, to move to hard drugs, anything along those lines, I'm just a firm believer in it. So, and I'm very adamant about this. I know I went on for a little bit, so I apologize for that. I have Molly. You had a question about my service. I'm a 10-year Army infantryman. I started with the 101st, went into the Honor Guard, 3rd Infantry in D.C., spent some time there. I was actually Section 17 right across from the Pentagon when the Pentagon was hit by the plane. I was doing a burial with my 6-man casket team. Within 30 minutes after that, we finished our mission, handed the flag off to the chaplain. Chaplain went ahead and took it on and back in. The family had ran off at that point. And within 45 minutes, we were changed out of our dress blues into our ODs and went on over to went in with our pro masks and our Kevlars and started recovering bodies. After that, we did burials.
That was the one you said in the Pentagon, right?
Yeah, it was the Pentagon, yes, sir. We did burials for the folks. The crazy thing is they were doing tracking because when you found or recovered an individual, you were turned it on over and you put down your unit, your squad. Well, come to find out, us doing burials, we were one of 7 teams that ended up doing the burials for 3 or more of the folks we found just on a whim. It was absolutely purely coincidental, but we did not know that necessarily was going to happen that way, but they were telling us because for some reason our specific squad were doing a lot more burials for the folks that we found. And that's just purely coincidence. So it kind of hit home pretty hard for us. I know several of the guys I was with are pretty sick after that. And 2 of them are actually being treated for cancer after the Pentagon. So not a whole lot of people know that. I have family sitting in here. And that's something that's kind of hitting home currently for me. My dad passed away. I exited, went home for a bit. And then, man, pretty quick, just before my 8 years, the Army said, hey, we want you back. We need some more infantrymen again. And so I got called back in on the inactive ready reserve and got attached to 11th ACR with a unit here within the state instead of moving my family back to Afghanistan. To the 101st, where the order stated, I attached myself to an active unit here that was going to be deployed so my family could stay here with their with the rest of our family. Went over to Iraq, went to was stationed in Baghdad, went to Ramadi and Fallujah. We were tasked with the provincial police, and we're tasked with basically the colonel, and we were his protective detail. And responded to all the Iraqi police stations getting blown up. I did a lot of the training of the Iraqi police on weapons. You guys will get a kick out of this. We were given brand new, out of the case, polymer black AKs and brand new Glock 19s.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Until you give it to them, the next day they come back without their weapon. They said they traded it for a goat. And that's not a joke. I'm dead serious about that. So we'd have to reissue weapons. We went easily every other day. We're given
what
five.
What a man won't do for love.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I was told it was purely for the benefit of the family, getting a new donkey or anything along those lines. But we obviously thought it was for farming needs. Cope, on the other hand, is... thinking opposite, but so spent a year and a half over there. It was a 15-month deployment, and came back, and then when it yeah, that was a pretty oh yeah, but good time. I won't change it for the world. My unit over there, we were the first. To come back with no casualties with a full deployment. And I still challenge that to be our tactics. We didn't fall for the ROE. We defended ourselves. And we were pretty aggressive, but guess what? It worked. We all came home. And so we're here today. I exited the Army in 2007, ironically. September 11th, 2007 is when I exited, which is... given my Pentagon history, was a very ironic date. And got into law enforcement thereafter. I've started my career as law enforcement with Pinal County. I've progressed to work both Pinal County and Navajo County. I built my career around search and rescue. Stated that briefly. I'm a firearms instructor, a field training officer, general instructor, search and rescue coordinator, and I just believe in our ground troops and training them properly to contact and be able to speak to the local populace. And so that's a little bit about me. It's a great question, Molly. Hopefully I didn't go a little bit above and beyond. But I'm being given notes, by the way, so I apologize. One of the side notes by one of my opponents, the Republican candidate, has asked numerous times, can a sergeant, which I was a staff sergeant, mind you, control 100 or more individuals in a combat situation? Well, I tell you this, I was in control for just Iraqi police, over 172. I trained, I operated, I placed on top of the assets needed for that. That ended up coming into approaching almost 200 at one point. On top of, I ran convoys with over 70 vehicles in them, and one convoy was over 300 folks. And yes, we got hit twice by IEDs, took small arm fire, and if anybody wants to challenge that as being combat, feel free. So, yes, it has happened. And it was in Iraq, so that is considered a combat zone for the folks that have never wanted to defend the Constitution or make that stand like I have. So if they need any further questions, by all means, go for it. They should have they were given my personnel records, so they should have my DD-214, and hopefully they look at that and see my awards as well.
Well, that would solve a lot of issues, wouldn't it? If they just take a look at that.
How many millions of dollars?
Well, I'm being asked. The other platform that I'm being challenged on is being in control or operating budget of multi-million dollars. We not only paid, we had to operate and maintain the Iraqi police payment on top of training them, their budget, everything along those lines. Now, that's not documented for the mere fact that we had run to Baghdad once a week and haul over, I think it was 110 million dinar, which is, I think, about 500,000 U.S. dollars. But we had to maintain and operate that on top of all the equipment that we received. And while in country, it was easily over 4 million in assets that I was literally having to maintain and line item. So
dollars,
excuse me. Yeah, $4 million, not dinar. So there's the answer to that question. I'm getting some questions in here as well, so I apologize for having to go back and forth. So
that's all right. We're pretty informal around here, so it's quite all right.
How was your ice cream, Cope?
Oh, man, it was good. I'm full of ice cream now. You know, there's people out there that say I'm full of something else every once in a while, but right now it's just ice cream. This Prairie Ghost Joker here asked about... It says it's hard to find a whistleblower when they know they'll be demoted, fired, or made a criminal by the current sheriff. No integrity right now. There won't be any until we get this guy, until we vote a guy like this in. You know, from what I understand, there had been an arrest made on these...
our local political sign scandal that we have going on here. Oh, it's unbelievable. We have an individual that's running for town council that is very adamant about her ability to show her integrity, and it's challenged mine numerous times. She's on my opponent's team. She helped produce this commercial that's out there, this ad, whatever you want to call it. Has actually said that I'm not constitutional enough, which...
Well, you didn't join the club, man.
Yeah.
You have to join the club.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That was the few that I won't be a puppet for. So that being said, there was an attempted arrest by the law enforcement who actually witnessed her take signs out of private property, put them in her trunk, not once, not twice, but three times, and then actually approached her on the fourth one. And then those officers who were going to do their job by simply, I don't know, criminally citing her, which is, I guess, doesn't make you qualified per them for an office, per the commercial that they put out, was challenged by their, or just plain told by their police chief that you're going to not arrest her, you're not going to cite her, you're going to turn into the county attorney. I will happily say that if I was out there taking political signs, I am sure my opponent would absolutely want me cited and arrested. And I think that would take all integrity away from a individual who's touting integrity. So it's I mean, people, you can't make this up. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on here with local politics. The people that have defended the Constitution being said you're not constitutional enough, and then people that are claiming integrity are literally stealing signs. And mind you, these signs aren't even political; they're privately owned slander signs being put on. Being purchased by private citizens, not by a committee, and so they're not political signs. They're property of other folks on private property that she just doesn't happen to like, because the mere fact that it's saying don't vote for her and her little team that she has. So, yeah, it's pretty humorous. Doing this for 6 months, I'll tell you what, it's pretty crazy. So, I'm not a politician, people. I'm a vet, and I'm a cop, and I want to see things better in our county. I know I can do it. I know I have what it takes to stand up. I do challenge you. Go to my Facebook page. Watch a video of my opponent and myself. See whose answers are better. See who's not nervous. And see if somebody that states she's a constitution is going to defend you from the government overreach
Even though 5 months ago she said she had never read the Constitution at that point?
4.5, actually.
And now all of a sudden she's a constitutional?
Yep.
Okay, I got it. She joined the club, though.
Yep.
I told you, you got to join the club.
February 17th at the Republican Coalition meeting, she actually stated publicly that she'd never read the Constitution before and couldn't answer a Second Amendment question, but she wanted to protect your rights as a gun owner. Because you love your guns, I love my guns, she's not going to let the government take your guns. So I do challenge you. It's a great video. It's halfway through. It's about 48 minutes into it. We start the sheriff's off the sheriff candidates, and she's nervous. She's nervous, and she states it. And I just challenge you to do your research if you live in my county.
All right, maybe we better take a break and regroup here.
What is
It's a cheating situation, a stealing invitation to take what's not really ours, to make it through the midnight hours. It's a cheating situation, just a cheat. Imitation, doing what we have to do. When there's no love at home, there's no use pretending. There'll be a happy ending where our love's concerned. Sweetheart, we both know we'll take love where we find it. Love and try to hide it. It's all we got, for we know they're not gonna let us go. It's a cheating situation, a stealing invitation to take what's not really ours, to make it through the midnight hours. It's a cheating situation, just a cheat. Imitation, doing what we have to do. When there's no love at home, it's a cheating situation. When there's no love at home.
No response from command. Or from party leader Creedy. Or from the High Chancellor.
Why are you doing this?
Because he was right.
About what?
That this country needs more than a building right now. It needs hope.
Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Inevitable. Inevitable.
Inevitable. People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Is it common sense to allow your activist judges to ignore your history, your culture, your Declaration of Independence, and every other founding document to remove God from public life? And endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, their Creator, not the ACLU, not the will of the atheists, or the anti-Americans that sit on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Separation of church and state, yes. Separation of God from public life, never intended by your founding fathers. Is it common sense that the very political party who claims to be the party of the people and shouts, "We will bring change," consistently stops all common sense legislation to secure your borders, establish workplace verification, and stop taxpayer money for illegals? They call themselves progressive global thinkers. We had another word for them in 1776. We call them traitors. This happened all once before. 232 years ago, it led to revolution and thousands of dead in the streets. It will happen again unless you take back America now.
I hope we have once again reminded people that man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
From my cold, dead hands.
Only an aroused citizenry will turn this uncommon sense around. And he or she who does nothing now is helping them to destroy America. My name is Thomas Paine, and I approve of this message. I only hope to God you will too.
Colonized America, we won't stand for tyranny. Oh, he. And it's too late to apologize. It's too late. I said it's too late to apologize. It's too late.
Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. We're back here with Graham Harbold, our choice for sheriff here in Navajo County, Arizona. I don't know how many listeners we have here in Arizona. I was asked that during the break. I don't have any idea. Even here locally, I know that the majority of our listeners are.
Well, my phone's blowing up. Apparently, listeners. We have quite a few tonight.
You what?
So my phone's blowing up, so I guess we have quite a few tonight.
Well, maybe at least for the short term, at least we got some extra ones in here tonight. So tell us briefly about your awards.
Well, I've been challenged not by both opponents on which is the ironic thing is because they both have my DD-214 now, and not sure you're correct. Specifically on my highest award, and then I was awarded the Bronze Star coming out of Iraq. So it's, as any military guy knows, we don't talk about that stuff, and it's one of those aspects of life. And do I deserve it? No. My squad did it. We made the choice to do it, and I wish they would have awarded everybody, but I happened to be the staff sergeant that day, and they awarded me for making the decisions. And like I told my squad, and I even had a couple other individuals there that day. You're just doing your job, period, point blank. That's what it comes down to. And if somebody feels that they want to give you an award, it's an award. But big picture is, yep, it's on there. It is on the DD-214 along with a few others. The colonel that I was protecting actually went above and beyond and got me the, as an Army, got me the Marine Navy Achievement Medal, and went so far as to submit for me to wear it on my uniform. And quite frankly, that means a lot to me for that man. I still talk to that guy to this day. Andrew Lim, if you're listening, I know you you stalk me on my Facebook page, and I appreciate it. It's there, and you have the document. Look at it. Stop passing along falsities, and move on with your life and try to win this campaign. That's my opinion.
You know, a while ago we talked about both the you know, the citizens, like a citizens police academy, or you get your bio, what do we call it, your posse and training and all those things. Well, there's a brand spanking new story out here just today. Woman, 73, fatally shot by Florida officer role-playing as bad guy during Citizen Police Academy.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the fears, liability fears come from, and it comes from poor training and discipline.
Amen.
I mean, that's just at the bottom line.
Well, you have range safety officers, not only for your range, but for training scenarios, especially if you're training with weapons. Both of my agencies, we have dummy guns, seized guns, in the aspect of they're welded shut, they're non-operable.
Mm-hmm.
Where they still look realistic, you have your small compact ones. And then we have blue guns, and we also have simunitions. Speaking of that, the current sheriff, squirrel, the sheriff just took shotguns off the road from the road patrol deputies, a longevity tool, because he asked deputies, you don't use it, do you? Well, you don't use it. So therefore, I'm going to take
it
off.
So he should take the fire extinguishers out of his house?
Yes. He is selling those to buy simunition merchandise for training purposes. But yet, once again, he's sitting on $2.5 million worth of training budget, if we want to call it that. He can use that money for training, but yet he just took shotguns off the road because he gives back 5-7% of the taxpayers' dollars every year, but yet he can't keep people. He has a vehicle crisis. He's taking shotguns off the road to buy training equipment. He's losing dispatchers. So I tell you what, I never used my pepper spray, but I got to keep it. So if you're taking shotguns, I think your priority's in the wrong place. So I digress. I apologize.
And I want the rest of you cowboys to know something. There's a new sheriff in town.
Is that Eddie Murphy? Yeah. But, yeah, no, we actually never put a hole through the roof. The floorboard, maybe. But I went off a tangent. What were you saying? I apologize about that.
I was talking about this, kind of what you were...
Yeah, the lady that was shot. It is a training concern. It's a training nightmare, quite frankly. I believe in three stages. We did it in Pinal County. We did it a couple training scenarios here where you actually download all ammo, all knives, everything along those lines at one station. You move to the next station, you get verified. If you're using simunitions, they verify, the range safety verifies that you're using a simunition gun, you don't have your duty weapon. Some scenarios you actually would just trade out slides from your on your Glock, and then you would progress through. I don't armchair quarterback. You know, the fact of life is on that scenario, shoulda, coulda, woulda, obviously, absolutely outlandish that a woman was shot during a training setting, but it happens. I had a team leader shot during training at the 101st during night vision operations. We did everything we were supposed to, but a young private couldn't operate with night vision on. Well, guess what? He got offline and put a 5.56 round through the foot of my team leader, out his calf, up through his butt cheek, and luckily had his Kevlar on because it skipped off his Kevlar. And what do we learn from that? Well, you not only have to dry fire, blank fire, live fire for rounds, but you also have to do that for night vision qualification as well. Because
anytime anything changes, yeah. Gas mask, night
Amen.
Vision,
you have to work on it.
Flashlight. Inside, outside, teams, multiple assailants. Anytime anything changes, then you start all over.
Yep. And so that's one thing I've learned about training, and that's one thing I take into training officers on the road, qualifications, everything along those lines. If we don't have a shooter, we start from ground zero, and we go from there.
Exactly.
So that's one aspect to training that I'm adamant on. And I know the training sergeants, one that used to be with us, is a firm believer in that as well. So it's terrible that occurred, but I'm sure they're going to have new protocols, and hopefully we get that figured out and doesn't happen again.
It's a shame that there's going to be a tremendous liability problem here. I think that Says the 73-year-old was there as a student at the Citizens Police Academy, a two-hour course intended to give an intimate look at what the department in the quaint Florida town works. On this night, a group of 35 would tour the station and talk with officers, an essential part of academy curriculum that was gained popularity across the country. The hosting officers chose two students to role play a lethal force simulation scenario intended to demonstrate how and when officers decide to pull the trigger. The woman played the victim.
They could at least use a taser.
Yeah. The photographer told the newspaper, let's see, and a police officer played the bad guy. These scenarios are usually safe, acted out with either fake or empty weapons. But when the officer's gun was fired, a mother, wife, and career librarian was hit with a live round, rushed to the hospital, and pronounced dead.
That's a sad, sad story.
It sure
that's
is.
That's terrible. It looks like we have a couple folks here locally that are on here with some questions. Do you mind me answering those?
Yeah, I'll see why not. It's up to you.
Prairie Ghost, do you have teams or plans in place to get your plans in action as soon as you are elected? Yes, I actually do. The biggest thing that I already have set in place, and that was the first 3 months, I have a round table of individuals that are willing to sit down with me. Combined, we're 150 to 170 years of law enforcement experience, commanders, chiefs, longevity retirees from law enforcement who've been around the block and have seen things and have operated not only our jail, but specifically patrol. So I do have teams set. I have a jail team set. I also have a patrol team set. The biggest thing that I would like to do is start a grant writing program for the sheriff's office specifically. I know 2012, the incumbent sheriff asked the prior individual running is, how are you going to bring money in? And I'm expecting that question again. Well, it's going to be done by grant writing. My goal, I have an individual that has held multi-million dollars for 3 years that's on board. They just recently retired and moved up to our neck of the woods and is willing to come on board with me. Those grants she wrote specifically are for training assets, education assets, school resource officers, everything along those lines, on top of vehicles. And that, those are three things that are on my platform to get fixed. On top of my command staff that is on board with me and moving in as soon as we ground's running in January. The big thing is I need to A, get elected. B is to loosen up money. I mean, if you look at the supervisor continuum, it's 1 in 9. We currently have 29 deputies. We're authorized up to 54 sworn officers for our sheriff's office. That's 10,000 square miles, and we have a lot of chiefs. Deputy chiefs, a lot of lieutenants on up, and we task and reorganize those. That's going to loosen up $300,000 to $400,000. I can put that towards our dispatch. Our sergeants, we're going to create a patrol sergeants instead of our admin sergeants, and I'm going to push money their way, make it worth their time to do what I need them to do. Right now, a lot of them are getting paid $1.50 more than a road deputy, and they're getting paid their task was so much, they're not out in patrol, they're not able to deal with the citizens other than over the phone. And that's one of the big things that we need to fix, I'm going to fix, and that's one of my plans as soon as we get set in. The next question, my endorsements. I haven't mentioned that yet, have I?
Nope.
My endorsements, I actually will be hopefully securing one more this evening. I probably have that email already. But I'm already endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police here in Arizona. That's over 9,000 ground troops of local and state law enforcement. The Arizona Police Officers Association, the APA. It's over 20,000 law enforcement. And then Northern Arizona Law Enforcement Association, that's another 900. And the big one to me is the showing of the want, the need, and my willingness to be able to work with other agencies and the White Mountain Firefighters Association. has endorsed me. They're part of the IFFA. I am very proud of that endorsement. I really, truly wanted it because I believe in cross-certifying, I believe in cross-training, I believe in cross-purchasing, and I know I can work with them, with their assets, to accomplish the common goal of giving back to the citizens to the best of our abilities. I had a couple great conversations with them. Our firefighters are a huge asset up here, and they just work their butts off to save us from a fire on top of state and national resources. If our community would have gone up, we would have never been able to recover from it. And this is their home too. So when it comes to law enforcement, we have to be able to work together. And I know we have a concern right now with the regional dispatch. There's a lot of concerns from law enforcement side, dispatch side, to also the firefighters need to get the specific needs met that they are needing. And I am completely on board with that. A follow-up question to that is my thoughts on my opponent's running with Richard Mack. Well, I've known who Richard Mack is. I've met him once since my opponent had this Get Out the Vote tour. With, by the way, with the team and the lady who stole the signs for the integrity. So it's kind of ironic. but the other thing is Richard Mack came out and endorsed her as a person, as an individual. We all know that he started the Constitutional Sheriff Police Officer Association. I think there's a lot of good into that, but getting into politics, there's a platform. And in 2013, that individual said that he was going to run for sheriff and make Navajo County a constitutional constitutional county. He had a heart attack, and since then he's been heavy. We've seen him out in Nevada, we've seen him up in Oregon, Utah area, and he lives in Gilbert, Arizona. And scuttlebutt is he's told two candidates, one in Mojave County, one here locally, that he's going to be their undersheriff. Well, he's also told individuals while he was here that my opponent is a humble person and she's going to do exactly what he says, which leads me to believe that my thoughts of my opponent being a puppet for a few is absolutely true. So the other thing is, if you're endorsed by an individual and then he comes to come work for you, what did that endorsement entail? Was it a, hey, I'm going to use my name to help you get in, so I can get into the office. I'm going to be the undersheriff. You're going to do what I say. We're going to figure it out. By the way, undersheriff is a very old term now here in the state of Arizona, and local law enforcement on top of the new verbiage, it's called chief deputy. And undersheriff is probably back, I think that's a term that Richard Mack used back when he was a sheriff quite some time ago. But the big picture is endorsement's endorsement. I'm endorsed by over almost 35,000 working men and women in law enforcement, and she has two endorsements by two gentlemen, not even through their organizations. So, and quite frankly, I say one now. With Sheriff Mack being on board, that's not an endorsement any longer. That's purely, I need help, come help me, and I can't run an office. So that's my thoughts on that. I'm sticking to it. If you have to bring in another sheriff to attempt to run for sheriff, I think you have concerns on your own, and your name's on the ballot. So the other issue is we have ran our own poll. People aren't realizing how, or starting to realize, quite frankly, how large my team is. I have a statewide team, and we're out of the valley. We had a poll ran, and we're ahead of her by quite a few points. So if we can keep that going, my endorsements are very strong. Large families of longevity firefighters and longevity law enforcement up here. So with those endorsements, we're doing quite well. So thank you for the question.
You know, there's a guy on Facebook that's asking, I don't know what he's, I think he's listening, but I don't understand the question. He said, could you ask him what he thinks of the layered voice analysis 6.50?
Yeah.
6.50. I don't know if that's a time on a tape or what. You know what that is?
Voice analysis 6.50. Where is that question? Is on Facebook or?
Yeah, it's on my page when I posted the deal on listening to the shooting events tonight. And one guy said he talked to two deputies yesterday with their families in the park. They said they were ready for a big change, and the command structure at the top needs to change as well.
Awesome.
They also said they did not want their opponent.
Well, while we're figuring
another guy said, could you ask him what he thinks of layered voice analysis? And I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what that means, too. I might know it as something else, but I haven't heard it as layered voice analysis. So
who, if you are listening, Alan's first name, if you are listening, we'll rephrase your question, and we'll see if we can get that answered for you.
Real fast, Molly, am I a conservative? Absolutely. I'm a Republican. I won't change. That's one thing. As soon as literally the county attorney, the day I turned in my paperwork, asked me what I'm running as, I told him Republican, and he screamed in the office of the elections where his office was as well, wrong demographic, wrong demographic. Our county's known as a Democratic county due to our voting populate north and south. But this election specifically, I think this is a time for everybody to, when I'm up on the reservation, I'm speaking to individuals and letting them know my platform and what I want to do. And as an election progresses, people want to choose who they feel best this election. Everybody is passionate about our politics right now because the world, the U.S. as we know it, is just absolutely dwindling right before our eyes. And so everybody's very passionate on choosing. I don't think necessarily... we don't necessarily work off of or push, at least I'm not. I want you to vote for me because you believe in what I believe in. Your party is just literally a letter this day and age. And quite frankly, a lot of people are going independent. And so the big issue to me is making sure everybody is aware that they have the ability to choose who they want. But also, get out and vote. Get registered to vote. And that's one of my biggest pushes, along with my opponent for that matter, because I met a 54-year-old woman that was very passionate, spoke very highly of the current administration in Washington. But when I asked her if she's registered to vote, she said no. That's amazing to me. So we got her registered. I submitted her paperwork. She actually ended up going independent because she liked... She thought that had to do with something what I had to say. But either way, just get out and vote. Yes, I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I'm born and raised a Republican. I will not change my party just to get votes. I'd rather get out and actually do some legwork and go talk with folks as many as I can. Am I a Christian? Absolutely. My wife and I go to St. Rita's Catholic Church. St. Mary's. My apologies. St. Rita's is the other one in Sholo. We go to St. Mary's here in Pine Top. So I am a Christian. I was asked earlier today. I haven't been able to get back to her. If she's listening, I'm going to say this publicly. I am pro-life, and I heavily believe in pro-life. So there's your answer to your question. I told you I'd say it, and that's public, so hopefully you're listening. I don't want to say her name because she wanted it to happen on Facebook. I'm being told it's stress analysis used like polygraph. But we'll do some more research on that last question. So Alan, we'll get back to you on that one. And we'll figure that one out. So any other questions? I didn't get the Facebook question either. Okay. Well, good. I'm not the only one, Mountain Shooter.
And there was, I'm trying to find it here. If you can buy us some time here, I'm trying to find the, Debbie asked a question, and I got to find it here.
A couple other things that I'm looking to do is, along the lines of our posses, I've discussed search and rescue several times. I really want to grow my search and rescue, group up here. We have one team that's dwindled down, and it's because of the inability and working relationships with other agencies. The big picture in my eyes is communication, training, and making sure people are appreciated. And that's, I'm very adamant about that. The guys I know that I've worked with know that. A simple thank you goes a long ways. Instead of expecting people to cater to you day in and day out. So I ask all the citizens, I know everybody on here will do it. You all respect law enforcement. You're willing to stand behind them day in and day out. I know that I've been on this page before several times. You may have seen me on there. Sheriff H is actually my call sign on there, so if you see me again. But get folks back on the side of law enforcement. Our government is absolutely degrading law enforcement right now and pushing people to one side, and it's absolutely ludicrous. So the big picture in my eyes is the men and women that are choosing this career field need to be taken care of. If you take care of them, it's going to fall back into them taking care of the citizens. And if they're trained properly, they get the training they want, we're able to keep longevity police officers with the training instead of retraining cops day in and day out because we can't keep them within the agencies. Just a quick little stat for you. Our salary base is roughly $40,000 a year for our officers. Where we live, it's not too bad of a salary with benefits. And these guys love what they do, but when they leave, to rehire one, it costs $75,000 the next year through everything, through everybody that takes to put that back in effect. So the big picture is we got to keep our deputies, get good deputies hired, take the time, and progress through and keeping them with longevity. So
why not? I don't know where that other question went. I'm trying to... Got stuff coming in from everywhere here. Hang on a minute. I'm still looking. We're just about out of time. Of course, I don't guess we got anybody after us, so we can run a little over if we have to. Dadgummit. I can't remember where that is. Debbie, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I can't find that.
So...
No, one gal, or a matter of fact, it was Molly had a question. Are you a Glock guy?
I am a Glock guy. That's
outstanding. There's the guy you voted yeah, for right there.
I know. Well, you know, I got into Glocks when I got into law enforcement, and you got a couple of 1911 folks in here, so I know we got into discussion before on your page, but the biggest thing to me is I shoot them well. And if I shoot a gun well, it leads to me liking the gun. And there, I'm sorry, I can't spend the money. I'm married and I have bills. I can't spend the money or the want to dump large quantities of money in the sidearm where I can own three of the same gun and be able to shoot well with it.
And 1,000 rounds of ammo.
And 1,000 rounds of ammo. So the big picture is, yes, I'm a Glock guy. And it's because I shoot them well. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
All right. Well, do you have anything you want to close with? We gonna.
No, I've kind of exhausted my platform on it. Thank you all, Cope. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
You betcha.
I do know there's quite a few local folks out here. Spread the word. Get out and vote. If you're not registered now for the primary. Get registered before the general election. You can still vote for me, independent, Democratic, doesn't matter. We do need a change here locally to protect our local law enforcement and to get community organizations back up and running so our citizens are actually are progressing as well as our law enforcement agencies are. So, I didn't say primary. In the general election, they can. It was corrected.
Let me give you a quick question that Molly had here, and I already answered her, but let's hear. I'm blindsiding you to this. Well, you and me haven't talked about this.
Okay.
But she said her question for Graham is, if a local business in your district has deemed that their business is a firearm-free zone,
How will you address the situation if a licensed gun owner with a concealed carry license would like to enter the business with their firearm and then asked by the business owner to disarm, and your deputies were called to the business? How would you, as a sheriff of Navajo County, address the situation?
Well, my deputies should know that if they're asking to disarm, they should have a storage facility for you, if you're an actual concealed weapon holder. If that doesn't work, we will inform them of the laws and the ability of you being a law-abiding citizen, and it's concealed. And if it's concealed, my question is, are you flaunting it or is it not concealed? We can answer, we can go in circles all day long about this. My big picture is, once again, I am a mediator. My deputies will have the ability, and the guys up here, they're good cops. They really truly are. They're going to know the laws and act as mediators for my sheriff's office. But the big picture is, where we live, they have guns as well. I haven't heard of that specific scenario, and if it has happened, I'm curious to what establishment that occurred in, because I am quite curious. But either way, the big picture is they should have a storage facility for you. If you choose not to do that, you have your rights as a gun owner. So I would love to jump into that topic. I would love to be a part and actually hear the owner of the shops and his inability to have common sense,
mm-hmm.
And that conversation. But the big picture is there's laws and that protect you as a gun owner, and I'm going to uphold to the gun owner's laws.
Makes sense to me. All right. Well, Graham Harbold, or Sheriff Harbold, here in the not-too-distant future, I think. So we'll get on out of here. And anytime you feel like you want to get in here and address something, or you've got a new program or whatever happens, or maybe just before or right after the primaries, or both, or whatever you'd like to do, if you want to take advantage of this, well,
I appreciate
please give us a holler.
Like us on our Facebook page. Follow us. It's Graham Harbold for Navajo County Sheriff. My Facebook page is Graham Harbold for Sheriff. My apologies, that's my web page. Either way, you can get on there, check us out, like us, follow us, and see what we're up to. And if you're up in our neck of the woods, let us know. Pleasure being here. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, we'll see you all Friday for living. Now, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm going to be out of town Friday. I'm going to do my ever-loving best to have Liberty Lounge on for you, but I can't promise it right now. But I should know by late Friday afternoon if I'm going to make it or not. But until then, I'll tell you good night. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all. Says it all.